I need some magic spoon to get me going today. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for May 25th. It's a Tuesday. Don't worry. 2021.
It is Tuesday.
That's Ian Furnison. Ian, what did I say? Furnison?
Furnison.
Furnison. I'm thinking of Furnaces and Christmas Story. Ian Ferguson with a snappy olive green shirt. I'm Pat Conchery with a black light shirt with alien stuff. Aliens are coming. On the show today, well, they really are here. On the show today, we'll be talking about Netflix getting into gaming. Have millennials killed nostalgia? The Skyward Sword amiibo controversy. Hot tub streaming and lots of other goodies. But seriously, about the alien stuff, I didn't realize that Obama went on the James Corden show a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said, oh yeah, there's stuff in the sky we don't know about. Like, that's, I can tell you for sure. He joked about saying, oh yeah, I there's stuff I can't tell you about, which I'm like, are you joking, Obama? Are you joking, Barack? But yeah, they're doing the drip. They're going to tell us something pretty cool in June. It's going to be more of, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the sky we don't know what it is. Which should get more attention than it has been. I don't see why this isn't, like, people are talking about this every day. When they're like, yeah, there's craft in the sky, and we don't know what it is.
Why June? Is that just the day that they said they're going to come out and talk to us about it?
It could be the one decent thing the past president did. It was part of the stimulus thing from my radio. It was like, you have to declassify certain reports via the Pentagon by this date. It's like June 20th or something. That was, like, thrown in there for some reason. Yeah, so they've been doing this slow drip through 60 Minutes. They did the story from a couple weeks ago, which is stuff that they leaked out a few years ago about the Nimitz in San Diego in 2004. That one, there was one that happened about 5 years ago. And they had all the pilots on 60 Minutes say, yeah, we saw this stuff. One of the pilots said, we see stuff every day, he said. For a couple years, we said, we saw stuff in the sky every day. He said it just like that, and it's like, And the reporter was like, oh, every day? He's like, yes, every day. This goes back to the astronauts used to see stuff. They reported seeing stuff. It's not space junk. It's not holograms. Or these are trained military professionals that could put their careers on the line for making up shit. You know? It's ridiculous. We're way past that point. That's only one thing Frank always said. It's like, you don't believe the person in the swamp seeing stuff, or you believe the professionals. You believe the airline pilots and the military. They know what this stuff's supposed to look like and how it moves. Sorry, I'm all primed for this.
You are.
I'm primed for this because it's ridiculous. Like what the hell is it? I think I'm more leaning into them being like a subterranean ancient civilization that's underground living, and they got teched and they came out and said hi to us, and they do that. Because a lot of these they've seen going into the water, these crafts, so I don't know what's going on. There's a lot of water. Now we're turning into George Norris Coast to Coast show. The sea is a vast, unexplored terrain. There's so much of the sea that has not been explored, and it goes down pretty fucking deep. We can't even get to. There's a lot of creepy stuff. They find new creepy creatures every year. They drag out of the water. It's like, oh, we thought this creature was dead for a million years.
Ten jaws.
No, I'm serious. Another thing that they thought was, you know, dead 50 million years ago. Oh no, here it is. We found another one of them. They're still alive. It's scary as hell, the deep sea. Scary. I'm not saying aliens are down there. They wouldn't be aliens. They'd be whatever, subterranean humans. It'd be like a Fantastic Four comic. What did you do this weekend, Ian?
Played D&D, which was great. I made the dinner this week. I did pulled barbecue chicken, and I did.
Oh God, really?
I did. Fasting. I did this cheesy corn that was just so delicious.
Oh, I'm asking for.
We're gonna tell you exactly how to make this cheesy corn right now, right here on this podcast. It's like it's like an Extra Napkins episode. You take 2 bags of frozen corn. You put them in the crock pot, about 2 pounds. You add about 4 tablespoons of butter, about a block and a quarter of cream cheese, 2/3 of a cup of milk, salt, pepper, cayenne, and then you set it on low. And you just let it go on low for like 3 to 4 hours, and then you throw like a cup of cheddar cheese in there and stir it all up. So good. It was amazing. I also went to the dentist. That was the last of my dental emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
When I started going to the dentist again last year, I had a lot of shit that I needed to get done. Finished up with a few cavity fillings yesterday. And yeah, feeling great.
Is your mouth saga finally closed? It's like the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Well,
that's what I was saying. That's pretty much it. Now it's just
We're on the epilogue with eight endings part of this journey.
I mean, at some point, I'd like to get a couple of fake tooths.
Is there space there?
Yeah, okay. I'd like to get a couple implants.
But, they're expensive. That's a problem with it.
They're very expensive.
Like $1,000 a tooth.
Oh, far more expensive.
Oh, really?
far
well, maybe
more
that's
expensive.
With insurance. There's like insurance only covers like half of it.
There's the actual tooth itself is probably $1,000, but there's a lot more.
I know they got my teeth are fucked. They got to put the fucking peg in there, drill it into your jaw.
I had to get bone grafts in there.
You got that to prepare.
So I've got halfway there. I've got the bone grafts.
So you want to get the fake teeth? Well, you don't see it, right? They're too far there, but you just want it just
you
for
can,
chewing.
But it's not for cosmetic reasons. I really don't give a shit. It's because I want to be able to, you know,
you want to chew,
chew properly.
You want a couple more.
Yeah.
You want a little extra jaw action there. Like, yeah. What?
A little extra jaw good. Action.
Yeah, back to the aliens now. what did I do? Oh, I just edited N64 reviews all weekend. 70% written. We're getting there. A couple of new editors helping out. There were also awesome writers, Christina and Daniel. Shout out to keep my sanity going.
Hey! Shout out.
I just think it's interesting how from these books I've gotten probably six people have said, hey, I want to do a book similar to your book or books, but for this console or for this. I've had even two people say, hey, I want to do an N64 book. And it's nice to have those thoughts and want to do it. But then once you actually get into the muck and you realize this is not something that's easily accomplished and it's something that tears at your soul in order to finish doing these projects. So to those people that want to do them, hey, best of luck. But there's a reason why you don't see these books come out with this much writing and this much depth and actually reviewing these games. It's tough. But I'm getting there, Ian.
Yeah.
I'm getting there. It'll be finished. It won't be out this year. The book will be finished this year. It'll be finished. Okay, sorry. But
finished but not released.
Yes, yes. That's something that people don't understand. It's like, oh, it's written. It means it's going to come out right away. No. It's like a movie. You got to go into post-production. There's some time. we got to put some stuff together. We got to print stuff, you know. Speaking of stuff being printed, that's worth a lot of money. A guy died of COVID, unfortunately. He left $20 million worth of baseball cards to his family. We talked about a story similar to this. It happened about a year ago where a guy was a collector and he had a basement full of stuff going back to like the 30s and 20s. And this seems to be a guy, I think, slightly younger. This is a baby boomer. This is a lot of these people are baby boomers because they grew up, you know, in the 50s and when baseball exploded after World War II, even bigger. And you had Mickey Mantle, and you had, well, DiMaggio was on his way out, and you had Willie Mays, you know, you had Jackie Robinson integrating the league. And you had a lot of these collectors have these cards as kids, and they were thrown out. The cards were thrown out. That's why they're not around.
Right.
They're famously, oh, my mom threw out my shoebox full of baseball cards. But they
we hear it these days with video games all the time. Back then, it was your baseball cards or your toy soldiers or you know, whatever the hell.
But the cards were actually scarce, unlike the video games.
Sure,
you know. So plus, they're paper products; they damage easily. So a lot of these collectors, once you hit like the 70s, once they were like, oh, we're in like our 20s, they started going back and buying this stuff because and we talk about in the mid 70s, a lot of these cards were only like 20 years old, 25 years old, even. God, only like 35 years old at that point for like a Babe Ruth card, you know, 40 years old. That's not a huge amount of time. You can still find this stuff. But so this stuff has gone up a huge amount in the past, probably since like the 80s, I'd say this stuff has shot, rocketed up slowly over time. But these are all being held by people that are older and now starting to die off.
Right.
If not the people that fought in World War II, very young people, it's now the next generation. It's people that were born in the 30s, 40s, 50s. They're starting to die off, you know, baby boomers. Or in between baby boomers and greatest generation, whatever, if that's even a generation, I don't know. You know, people born like the 30s, late 20s.
Yeah, what are the generations pre-baby boomers? Well, do they get names?
Yes. Oh, yes. There's a silent generation, I believe. Like the ex-lennial, like there's this crossover stuff. I don't know. They're all dead by now, unfortunately. Rest in peace. Well, not all, but, you know. It's the oldest person alive, like probably 120 years, I think, at this point, something like that, 125. So this person had Babe Ruth cards, the Mickey Mantle 52 rookie, the famous one, where he's looking over his shoulder,
Looking coy.
This was a doctor. He was 73. He was a neurologist, and he passed away, unfortunately. He also has memorabilia going back to the 1880s. Now it's going up for auction. So he's got the 33 Babe Ruth Gowdy card, which you probably would, if you saw the picture, you'd say, yeah, I've seen that before. They expected to break the record of $5.2 million for any sports card. The president of Memory Lane Auction said, well, of course he's going to say he's running the auction. How is that ethical? Oh, it's definitely going to be the most ever.
Why does
ever.
This keep happening?
Yeah. How is this ethical to do this? Why does the reporter say that's crazy to say? That's going to be an auction house in Tustin, California. And they showed the collection be moved onto a truck. And I'm talking about this guy has – it's a moving truck. Like it looks like a 16, 18-foot moving truck, most of it packed two-thirds to three-quarters up of stuff. So it's nuts. It's got Lou Gehrig cards, Otis Wagner, Ted Williams. He has the World Series program books dating back to 1903.
That's cool.
That's fucking cool.
That's cool. I like that sort of shit.
So you're talking about someone that probably started doing this, yeah, when he was like probably either late teens, early 20s. Like, I'm going to go back, like how we were doing with our video game stuff. I'm going to go back and buy all this shit my mom threw out or that I still want to get and become the original preservationist for this stuff. It's interesting to see that. But my point about bringing this stuff is not to say, wow, look at all this stuff, is that more and more people are going to die and do this and leave this shit. And it's going to come out into the world. And at some point, not saying a Babe Ruth rookie card or Otis Wagner tobacco cards are ever going to be worth nothing. At some point, there's going to be a lot more back in the market that people that didn't grow up collecting stuff or aren't as interested are going to have to buy to sort of maintain the value. I don't know if that's a possibility. I don't know if someone like me, even if I was rich, would be like, wow, I want to buy a Babe Ruth card for all this amount of money. I'll buy it for this amount. I'll buy it for $100,000, but I'm not spending $5 million on it. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
That's the games we get into. So it's not automatically always going to maintain its value over time. Even for stuff that's actually rare like this. Yes, it's rare.
You still have to have people who want it.
We have two guys that died in the past year that have collections worth many millions of dollars. There's other people that have stuff like this. There is. So it's just will the amount of cards being put back on the market ever run over the number of people that want it? You know, we're ever going to get an imbalance again. That's all I got to say. He started collecting in the early 80s. Oh, so that's a little bit later than people started collecting in the 70s. But okay. He started with baseball cards in 57, 59 when he was 10 to 12 years old. Yeah, he's a boomer. He is the boomer. He was born in 46. After he came back, lots of sex, tract housing, and kids start popping out.
Yep.
You have a suburban backyard with your white picket fences. Like that's what happened. That's where he got all our suburbs from after World War II, basically. GIs come back. They want a place to live, go work in a factory, like Frank's dad. Now, Frank's dad had the best line. It was, all right, so these kids grew up in the Depression with nothing, all right? Then they're asked to go overseas and get shot at, and they come back and you work in a factory for 30 years, right? That's what they're doing. That's a, yeah. It's true. That's what they all did. My grandfather as well. Grandfather was a bike racer.
A bike racer?
Yeah. The guy's patch.
Oh, yeah. I see. I know the patch.
My father and uncle sold his bike. His, like, bike from the 30s. When I found out about it, it was too late. They sold it to some collector. I said, how could you sell? It's basically a family heirloom. A bike that at that point was like, I think it sold like 2003 or 4. A bike that at that point was like 70 years old. I couldn't believe it. Like, are you fucking serious?
That's crazy.
And because of that, I go overboard and keep all the shit because they don't keep the important stuff like that.
you've corrected in the extreme direction.
A racing bicycle from the 30s. They fucking... That my grandfather fucking, I don't get it. I was infuriated. Then my grandfather was like, if I knew if you wanted it, Patrick, I would have kept it. And I was like, well, you know, I think I might have been off at college at the time. I didn't realize what was going on.
Sure.
And a lot of old people don't keep that stuff that once they get up there. My grandfather at that point was probably like 80. So he's like, you know, I don't know. Let's go. What else is happening?
So NFTs are stupid. We've discussed this before.
They've peaked officially according to like the analytics.
Really?
In terms of like the money being spent per NFT average has like plummeted the past month.
And I mean, with something that got hyped up so quick, I can tell you that I've definitely seen a dramatic decrease in the amount of people talking about them too. The excitement over them in mainstream circles has kind of come and gone. But I did notice that Topps is officially getting into NFTs. I saw that about a week ago.
We predicted that. We said, yeah, they're going to have
that was going to happen.
Rip and open a virtual card pack. Yeah.
So Topps got into it. But on YouTube, now it's extended to viral videos, NFTs and viral videos. So there's a apparently quite famous viral video. I think I've seen it once. I honestly
you never saw this video?
I think I've seen it once. Like okay. I don't remember seeing it everywhere, but it's familiar to me. Apparently it's far more famous than I'm aware. Charlie Bit My Finger.
Oh, yeah.
A video of a baby named Charlie biting a finger.
Of his older brother.
Of his older brother. Who
and not just biting it, is happy that he caused the pain to his brother. That's what makes the video.
Yes. And that video was turned into an NFT. It was minted on the blockchain and sold for how much? $760,000, something like that?
$699, so just under $761.
Just under $761.
What a deal. What a deal.
Usually when we talk about NFTs, we talk about how there's no real like true ownership involved, or you know, if it's of an image or something like that, it's all over the internet. You can click it, right click it, save it.
Like the Nyan Cat, according to this article, was sold
Neon
for
$531,000.
Neon? Is it Neon?
Neon.
Oh, like Neon. Neon. Like N-E-O-N.
Neon.
Oh, and the name. Oh, it's like a three-way split there with the name. Yeah. Got it.
But the people who the family behind this video is actually delisting it from YouTube after it's been sold. That's not actually going to change anything. That's absolutely...
I'm sure no one has this on their hard drive. It's not been re-uploaded 1,000 times elsewhere. Yeah.
But it's a symbolic gesture that you don't even usually get that with an NFT sale or purchase. Yeah, I think this is absolutely ridiculous. It's not like this video is going to magically disappear from the internet. It was viewed over 831 million times or some shit like that. Just an absolute
880.
I don't want to short it.
Has it already been delisted? Have they paid for it?
Yeah, I believe it's been delisted.
Wow.
So
said waiting on NFT decision. That was the last update on the 23rd. It was uploaded. Oh, no, it was uploaded on May 23rd, 2007. Wow, yeah, early YouTube. Early issue. YouTube
this
1.0.
Article does do an interesting thing that I think is interesting. The NFT itself is the token of ownership.
Yeah.
It's not like the video is an NFT. The picture is not an NFT. The GIF is not an NFT when you buy these things. It's the token of ownership.
Yeah.
And the token of ownership points you to what you own.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that people have been talking about is, you know, one of the fears with NFTs is one day all of these NFTs are going to point to fucking broken links.
Oh, I didn't think about that aspect. I thought at least own. You're saying you don't own the copyright to that. You own that specific. It's fucking weird.
Yeah. Anyways, it's weird enough, and I'm done talking about that.
This is the point. People are throwing out money.
I don't want to discuss NFTs.
I mean, God, you're spending $750,000 on something that you can't make money off of. You can't. You're never going to make this back. Even if you got another 880 million views, you're not making that money back. Even on ads.
You could make money. Oh,
tell me.
Well, you can make... No, I'm just saying, ideally, that's the whole point of NFTs, is you ideally can make money, but people are buying these things at what I would consider probably maximum valuation.
Oh, you're
saying, only going to go down.
You're talking about investment. I'm talking about actually using that piece to make money off it in a natural market way. That's what I don't see.
Yeah, I don't think you can go and then turn that video into a commercial for something. Just because
I guess you can license it out. I've seen that on commercials before being used. Like, license it out. You know, you have maybe the ownership in that respect, or print T-shirts. But the point is, you're never making that back. You're not. In terms of selling it for that amount, no.
You're not going to flip it for more.
No.
That's what I keep saying is, like,
there's no intrinsic value to any of this stuff.
And that's what I keep thinking about these is all these insane prices you've seen for people buying these NFTs.
It's like a stupid tax for the rich. That's what it is. They say it's like, you know, a stupid tax buying lottery tickets. This is a stupid tax as well. Almost, you're buying stuff that you're not going to make your money back on in an obscene way.
Yeah, I don't see the valuation going higher.
There are people with lots of money that are really stupid There's a lot of people that have money that didn't work to get that money.
I was
going
to say, you don't have to be smart to have lots of money.
There's people that got lucky or trust fund or inherited money. There's some that I'll, maybe half and half, but there's a lot of people that have money that don't know what to do with it, obviously, and end up doing shit like this. But they're helping out. Hey, they're paying the people that, that Charlie now has all the money they ever want, whoever got the original.
Hopefully.
Or the father. Their family has this money now. So good for them. The little girl, that meme photo of the girl turning and looking like Sandra Smile.
She made like $500,000.
Good for her.
Yeah.
These are stupid people with money. You're getting rid of, It's like, I can't even say you're fleecing them because you're not tricking them. They're just stupid.
I would be fine with NFTs fleecing the rich if it wasn't for the fact that it's just
it's destroying the environment. Destroying the energy.
I have no problem with fleecing the rich. That's fine.
Don't eat the rich. Fleece the rich. There you go.
Fleece the rich. Well, they probably wouldn't taste very good.
I never said they eat the rich. It's like, okay, I don't want even jokingly cannibalistic things is fucking weird. I'm sorry. That's weird. Okay. You know what's weird? UltimateNintendo.com. You're not fleecing anyone. You're getting great deals on books, RBI baseball stickers, enamel pins, T-shirts. Are you laughing? How I pull this out of my butt every week. I'm on Cameo as well, cameo.com/PatContry. I will tell your friend they're an idiot for getting into NFTs on cameo.com/PatContry. I'm also on Twitch every Wednesday night watching 80s commercials. Ian made a surprise appearance because maybe I tagged him on Twitter.
No, usually I don't go when you tag on Twitter. I usually
it's rare that
it.
I tell you, though.
Yeah.
It's rare.
But it's usually an instant no.
Wow. Okay, Dad.
But this week was different. I went. I
ask
up.
Me again. We're not going.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct. Wow. You just triggered me. Holy
very
shit.
Very sorry.
Oh, God. I'm like 4 years old again. Sorry.
Yeah, but I went and watched you do the commercial.
Wasn't it fun? Isn't it fun?
It was interesting.
He always gives me like the quarter fucking compliment on my stuff.
Commercials are not that interesting to me. But it was fun to join the chat.
Hey, Ian, how's this Super Nintendo book? Yeah, it's okay. it's a thing. It's a thing. Thanks, Ian. Another thing you haven't fucking comment my father. God damn it. Hey, yeah, what do you think about this book I did? Yeah, all right.
Yeah, all right, you did it.
Yeah, you want these extra books back, you said? What should I do with these? He actually said that. What should I do with these?
What should I do with these?
Yes.
Wow, man.
We're getting into my trauma more and more every week. I'm letting it bleed out slowly.
Jeez Louise.
Yes, jeez Louise, Ian. That's a thing.
What do I do with these?
What do I? I don't know, Dad. You show them to people. You're proud that your son did something.
Read it.
My uncle was proud of it. My uncle said he was very proud of it. Uncle Jimmy. Thanks, Uncle Jimmy. He was very proud of it.
It's nice that your Uncle Jimmy was into it.
My Uncle Jimmy actually sent me a nice note around Christmas saying, "Hey, Pat, it's awesome you did this stuff. You're doing the creative stuff. It's really cool you're doing that.
Keep it up, Patrick."
Yeah. He basically said something. Wow, I wish my father sent me this note. This is fantastic, Uncle Jimmy. Sorry.
It's all good.
I got into... go on.
What's next?
I don't know. Online game boy multiplayer. Tell me about this.
So, this is neat. Someone has figured out a way to send basically handle the communication protocols between Game Boys over the internet.
This is from TechCrunch.
And with a special link cable, you can plug your Game Boy into a PC and go to like a central hub and link up with someone else and play Tetris, which is very cool. This is something that I remember thinking about, 10, 15 years ago. On the Neo Geo Pocket Color message board, I remember we had this conversation once. We were like, is there a way that you could do that? And I remember whoever I was talking to at the time was like, yeah, but it would be really, really tricky. And that does appear to be the case. So they have to basically reverse engineer the communication protocols that for each game.
Each game is different.
For each game is different. Okay, it's not like you can go to this central hub and play any two-player.
It's not like the GameSpy interface from the 2000s.
Right,
basically.
You can't just play any Game Boy game with someone. Right now, it's only Tetris, but they said that they will be working on making more games compatible.
This is YouTuber Stack Smashing. That's the person that pulled this off. or at least is communicating it. You can buy, they're selling, they've monetized it, good for them, capitalism. You can buy the adapter kit to do this. USB to Game Boy Link cable adapter.
Between the Link cable and a Raspberry Pi.
You need a Raspberry Pi to do this.
Yeah.
Okay, not a computer. Well, you know, Raspberry Pi is a mini computer. Raspberry Pi Pico, you need to bring and solder on your own. You need a Link cable. You can get on Amazon, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Okay, so you need an actual Link cable. Then you need this adapter, this USB to Link adapter, to solder that into a Raspberry Pi Pico. Okay.
And then the Raspberry Pi communicates is communicating with a server.
With like Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Okay, that makes sense.
So yeah, it's cool. And Stack Smashing has made the source code open source. So hopefully more people will jump in, get in there, and do more with it. That would be really freaking cool. If more games, as soon as they figure out how to do Pokemon,
we are entering.
That's crazy.
This is like
that'd be so much fun.
The silver age of handhelds, basically. You have the Evercade stuff, you got the Playdate coming out. You know, you have all, you know,
Analog Pocket, Playdate,
Analog Pocket.
Evercade is huge. Now you got people, you know, making multiplayer servers for original Game Boys. It's awesome. I couldn't be happier.
Maybe Nintendo will acknowledge they had a Game Boy at one point. They'll say, "Hey, we have a Game Boy. Here's a compilation pack of Game Boy games. That's like something. Here's like do something with these properties."
A lot of good games on the Game Boy.
It's really weird. I want to learn about some. I never had a Game Boy, you know? I want to learn about some of that stuff.
Should do a book.
Only if you write for it, Ian, I'll do the Game Boy.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, you know? Go out on top with the quadrology, like the original Alien movies. Own the quadrology. Whatever the fuck they called it.
Swimming aliens.
Let's talk Limited Run.
Yeah.
I haven't done Limited Run little mini topic in a while. They're doing some releases and re-releases. I'll start with the one that doesn't interest me quite as much. They're doing the Double Dragon, both Double Dragon games. They're doing the Double Dragon 4 NES one that came out. Wow, is that 4 years ago that came out already? Remember the one that when the cars originally came out, they didn't run on all systems and there was problems with them?
That's different.
That was different?
That was, you're thinking of the re-release of Super Double Dragon.
Oh, that was a re-release of Super Double Dragon. That was the one with the problems.
And that was the one that was
apologies.
Double Dragon 4, this was...
The NES one was fine. Okay.
This isn't an NES game. This was a retro Double Dragon made like 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, okay. This wasn't put on a cart originally.
No.
Oh, it wasn't. Okay, I'm sorry. I confused that with the Super Double Dragon. Okay, this came out 4 years ago. Now there's going to have a Switch Limited Collector's edition here with cute Billy and Jimmy keychains of Billy kicking Jimmy and the Nards there. And it's going to have a soundtrack on this in a retro cartridge case, so it looks like an NES cartridge, the soundtrack. And you get a poster here. They're also, though, doing a limited collector's edition of the Double Dragon Neon one. That's the newest one, right?
No.
That's not the newest one.
Wait. In terms of Double Dragon, yes, but it's a few years old.
It
was released on the 360. Yeah, yeah. It's old.
Holy shit!
It's a very old game that's finally. It's an old game that's finally getting a physical release.
So that's getting a Switch release as well, and that has a really cool cassette soundtrack. That's awesome. They're actually putting an audio cassette there, and you get cards, and you get Dragon Kick soda can. It's empty. It says, and you get Billy and Jimmy figures there. So, yeah, these are cool little packages. I've never played either of these. You're more the beat-em-up guy when it comes to this. I was kind of interested in the time to see, an NES-style Double Dragon sequel, because that sort of like, oh, we're going to do it. Because that's only happened with like this and really Mega Man, where we said, oh, we're going to come out with like official NES-style, you know, sequels.
I didn't really give Double Dragon Neon much of a chance. I know a lot of... It's one of those games that got kind of... shit on when it came out, and over the past few years a lot of people have gone back to it and been like, no, it really wasn't that bad. So especially with my current like love of beat-em-ups, I will try Double Dragon Neon. I will definitely give that a fair shake at some point. Double Dragon 4 I have digitally, I think, on the PlayStation 4. It's fine. I didn't love it, didn't hate it. It was okay.
It's an NES style.
Yeah, it was. It's an NES style Double Dragon.
But not. But wasn't done in assembly though. Okay, that I didn't know. So it's, you can't make an NES.
No, no. It was meant to look like an NES game, but it's just a modern.
All right, that, I would have been maybe in on that if it was like an NES cart, like an actual NES cart. But that okay. So these are the two little guys that I'm like, okay, these are interesting. What's more interesting though is the Mega Man Wily Wars Genesis re-release they're doing. Well, it technically never came out on the Genesis itself, but the Mega Drive it came out in Europe. So that's a very hard to find game that I did without even looking goes for probably several hundred dollars at this point complete.
I've probably seen more bootlegs of that game than almost anything else on the Genesis. It's a really, really popular bootleg because it was never released here and because it's so expensive, even if you can find it. I don't think I've ever actually seen a legit copy of it. I think I've only seen the bootlegs.
It was probably several hundred dollars a few years ago. Now the one buy it now is $1,600.
There you go.
Again, this is PAL on the Mega Drive here. There's tons of bootlegs you can buy here.
Yeah.
I mean, tons. Man, I should have bought it when it was a few hundred dollars, like back in like 2015.
Outside of Pokemon, I swear it's one of the most bootlegged games.
I had no idea. I should have realized with the everyone spending money on Charlie Bit My Finger and other weird stuff happening. There's also it looks like in Japan it doesn't go for nearly as much. There's one in Japan for $355. There. Wonder why? Because they want to say Mega Man, I guess, versus Rockman.
Probably. I guess collectors are weird.
Okay. So they're doing this as well. And this package has, they got a standard $70 one. Oh, it's published by Retrobit.
I was going to say this looks like a Retrobit release.
Oh, this one's published. Okay, they've partnered with Limited Run the past couple years to help sell stuff with them. So, okay, so it's a collector's edition. You get a cartridge sleeve, full color instructional manual.
I actually really like the box on this. It opens and you can see the Mega Man in there. It's lenticular. So it's probably one of those hologram ones. But it comes with four different cards.
So you can swap them?
You can switch it out.
Okay, that's pretty interesting.
I'm actually sold on that. That's pretty cool.
It has a clear blue cartridge, blue bomber cartridge. And then it has a certificate of authenticity. I think it's funny just to see that. You can say, hey, look, I got a certificate saying that this isn't bootleg, that Capcom is licensed this.
It's something that they've always done with their releases. But it's nice to know, and it's one thing that I always like to point out when these sorts of releases happen. This is official. There's nothing dicey about this. This is Capcom-backed.
Yeah. They're saying, go have at it, Retrobit. Make your sticker books and
stuff. Actually got a good option now. You can either get the original European one for way too much or a new one.
And we'll see what it does with prices. We'll see if it brings prices down. But if there's bootlegs, though, people might. But there's some people like me that might. I want something official. I don't like bootlegs, you know, but maybe something official I'd get, you know. So these are all open pre-orders. That's the good news. They're open pre-orders. And then for this one, you have until June 20th. To get this one. So you got a full month to get it. So no complaints. You got a month to pre-order it. So I don't want to hear, they're making artificial scarcity. They're going to make as many as people, you know, order. So there you have it. There you go. You ever think about stocking any of these? They don't do wholesale stuff to, like, game stores, do they? Do they do, like, Retrobit for stuff like this? Can you put these on the shelf? Would people buy these if you stock this?
I think certain ones they would, but people don't talk about it a lot.
Yeah. Oh. It'll talk about these licensed re-releases?
If we were, yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Metroid Prime 4, remember, had the teaser for this, like, at this point, like, 3 years ago, saying, oh, it's in development. And then the year later, like, yeah, I remember that game that was in development. We threw all that out, and we're going to start from scratch, which was the last time we ever saw just about Nintendo say something's in development, because they realized there's no advantage to doing that. And it's an embarrassment that'll never happen again. Same way a little bit Nintendo, they usually learn from their mistakes, and it might take a while to come around, but they don't usually do the same thing twice. That's bad. So this was alerted to us on Twitter that there's a Metroid Prime 4. We don't usually talk about this, but this is interesting because it's the one weird case with Nintendo. It's listed on Best Buy's site, Metroid Prime 4 for Nintendo Switch. There's an official listing on Best Buy's site with a SKU. With a SKU already for it. Release date not announced. You can pre-order, I guess, if you wanted to, and then have it come out whenever. But I just think it's interesting that, you know, that they got a SKU for it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that means...
They got a UPC code, basically. They got...
Maybe we'll actually see something.
A stock keeping unit is different than a UPC. They can be the same. This might be Best Buy just maybe getting word, and we're going to just put it on our site for some reason. But Best Buy made a SKU for it. Yeah, my mistake. I should know better. A SKU is not necessarily the UPC. It can be, though, but it's an internal keeping code. That's what a SKU is.
What about a SKU PC?
Is that a thing?
No, I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
SKU PC?
SKU PC.
Sounds like an 80s toy, which we'll get into later about nostalgia.
Skewpy.
Controversy, Ian, with Skyward Sword. Nintendo's not learning this mistake yet. This is the first time they've done this, something like this.
Yeah, this is lame. So I don't think Nintendo will reverse course on this. So I don't know much about how Skyward Sword is played, but I do know that traveling between, I guess, dungeons in the sky is something you can do in Skyward Sword. And according to people who have played it, played the original game, it was one of the more disliked aspects.
We love Dungeons in the Sky. Oh, tell me why. Yeah, 90s techno stuff.
Castles in the Sky by Ian Vandal.
That was an Ian. Oh,
yeah, it was. You threw me for a loopy.
So
anyways, traveling. Yes. So this travel mechanic, however it works entirely, was one of the more disliked, frowned upon aspects of the original game. So they fixed it in this game, but to do this sort of fast travel, you need to buy an amiibo. Mm. And that just seems really lame. These updates and fuck.
Update.
These upgrades and remasters, the whole point of buying them is for these quality of life improvements that weren't there the first time. So yeah. to sort of buy one and then be told to get that extra. So you're already paying $60 for this re-release of a game that's been out for years.
Ian's clapping. He's angry.
I get it. I'm not $60. Wouldn't be so upset with that if everything was included, but to charge $60 and then be like, no, you have to give us a little bit more to play this, you know, properly, or to play this, you know, in the smoothest way possible. That's fucking annoying. And I think that's real shitty.
And it's a $25 amiibo. Didn't amiibo start at like $10-$12?
Oh, it's not even. That's right. It's one of the bigger ones.
$25.
It's a bigger amiibo.
So
yeah.
You can say, okay, it's a $10 little amiibo. Like, they were $10 when these came out.
They were like 13.
Like 6 years ago, whenever it was.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, it was Wii U.
Okay.
It was the one thing they made money off of with the Wii U, was selling plastic shit. So you have a situation, like Ian astutely pointed out, you're paying $60 for an upgraded product that's not totally upgraded. We're going to paywall stuff that's in the game. We programmed this shit in the game, but now you use your little what is it, NFC fucking thing? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And then we zap it in and say, okay, it's unlocked now because you spent money.
It's
for $25, by the way.
It's gross. And
yes, you get a little statue trinket, but
I cannot. I mean, there's no way to justify or spin that. That's just greed.
And yeah, this is bad.
Yeah, it's a bummer to see. And I don't think they'll go back on it. But yeah, paying $60 to have the upgradable version that's not upgraded. I mean,
I don't remember a time I've ever doing this before.
Right.
Yeah, you can always do the amiibo. You scan it in, you get a fucking extra ingredient for your Breath of the Wild pot or whatever. That wasn't changing the game. It wasn't altering the game to such an extent.
Get a handful of rupees.
Yeah.
You get
a fucking axe showing up and you kill some guy with, I don't know.
I've definitely played games with amiibos that, you know, unlock or do things, but it's always something small. It's not like a massive improvement to the flow of the game.
Yeah, this makes your life better because you're cutting out all this travel time. Yeah.
It cuts out something that was poorly reviewed the first time. So it's like, pay us money to get rid of this problem, even though that's what these releases are already supposed to do.
Well, now the cynic me is like, did they figure this out afterwards, or was this planned the whole time? Nintendo realized that, hey, we're going to milk you for an extra $25. Plus tax. If you get it.
I got to go get a seltzer.
Do you think that you're leaving? You're leaving the podcast.
Yeah, I'm walking down the street.
Okay, no, okay. 7-11. Okay, am I doing the next top by myself?
No, I'm literally just grabbing a can from the fridge.
All right, we're back, and Ian has his polar seltzer water. Did you bring enough for the whole class for me?
I did not.
What flavor is that?
Cranberry lime.
Oh, that would have been so delicious. Where did you get that from? I'm going to buy some.
Vonnie gets it at the naval base.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the few places in San Diego you can buy polar by the case.
Okay. Speaking of water, Ian, hot tub streaming has hit the mainstream consciousness the past few weeks. So on Twitch, there's a new phenomenon that's been started or allowed.
A fad.
Fad, maybe, probably not at this point, where streamers are either streaming from a jacuzzi, an actual jacuzzi, or a hot tub, or what it's turned into is people getting an inflatable pool, putting it in their room, filling it with water to put on a swimsuit or bikini, and streaming. This is what's been developing. So, of course, naturally, a lot of people, some streamers and people watching, like, what is happening? And asking questions like, is this what Twitch is for? Blah, 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 blah. You know, so people were waiting for Amazon/Twitch, Amazon owns Twitch, to respond and to say, hey, is this proper? What do we think about this? Especially since an advertiser came out against this. An advertiser basically said, what is this? What do we want to advertise in front of this? So it forced Twitch. Twitch could have done a couple of things. They could have said, no, you're not allowed to do this. This is for, if you're going to be in a room, you should be gaming and not in an inflatable pool. Instead, they made a specific pools, hot tubs, and beaches category to try to address advertiser confusion surrounding hot tub streams.
So, basically, advertisers can choose by category to opt in to, sure, or opt out of certain advertising. Obviously, certain things they can't. You can't do like race, gender, etc., that sort of thing. But they could choose to opt out of, say, this pools, hot tubs, and beaches category.
Well, you have categories of streaming. There's not racial based categories. But
no, I'm just saying, like, advertisers can choose what,
yes,
they can.
So when you,
they
when,
can't do it
so
based
when I
on
stream,
like religion, creed, etc. But you can do it on this.
Yes, but like what I'm saying, like when I stream, like if I stream AIDS commercials, I hit the retro sort,
sure,
of category. There's categories for games, you know, things like that. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is interesting. They went that route instead of just saying we're going to just not allow it or have a sort of, you know, zero tolerance policy when it comes down to it. So they put out a lengthy statement, and there's some good in the statement they put out. They acknowledge the confusion surrounding hot tub streams, a growing subset of streams on Twitch that consists of people streaming while in a hot tub or mini pool. Yes, they're mostly mini pools. They're mostly people just setting up inflatable, you know, 4-year-old pools, you know, the little ones we had as a,
yeah,
kid, you know, and doing that. They said if you have chosen swimwear that is allowed under the swim and beaches contextual exception to our standard nudity and attire policy. Oh my God, my head's swimming. You should stream into the pools, hot tubs, and beaches category. I like how they said you should stream into them. We'll be reaching out to creators with more details on how to use this category moving forward.
That was going down a water slide into the pools, beaches.
God, I miss water parks. Streamers have always been allowed to appear in swimwear, according to the blog, so long as wearing swimwear is contextually appropriate, i.e. at a beach, in a hot tub, or in a pool. The blog mentions that nudity or sexually explicit content, which the site defines as pornography, sex acts, and sexual services, is not allowed. Twitch says it's sexually suggestive policy, which has been used by some to rally against hot tub streams, was meant to draw a line on content that is overtly or explicitly sexually aggressive, not to ban all content that could be viewed as sexually suggestive, according to the blog. Okay, so they're basically saying that you can be sexy, but you can't do sex acts. Okay.
Yeah, no Beach Boy blow bangers.
What? Is that a band?
Huh?
Okay, so Here's the deal, though. You're now going to get into, it's already a gray area. You're going to have someone actually decide and define what or is not qualifies as sexually suggestive or not. You're going to have someone that, and you're going to have arguments come up now saying, well, Because I've seen the pictures. Well, that bikini streamer is humping a banana floaty. Is that sexually suggestive? Yes or no? Someone's going to have to decide this stuff now. Versus another guy who maybe, I don't know, rubs himself and that's decided to be sexual. We're getting into this area now where the argument is like, is Twitch designed for this? No, I don't think it is. I'm just going to say that. And it's not just gaming. Yes, people. Yes, Twitch started as Justin TV. I know that. I was streaming. I streamed fucking 2010 awkward hourly meetups or 2-hour meetups. The point is that now you're having Amazon decide what is not appropriate in areas where they were did not have to think about before, and we didn't have to think about. And you should say, hey, Pat, why do you give a shit at all if you're not doing that? It does because it affects everyone. Because obviously it affects advertisers saying, I don't want to put my money into this. Now, though, if something happens where something sexually suggestive is involved, there's children involved because Twitch is 13 plus, you're going to have a...
Yeah, but you put mature filters on your content.
But they're not saying that it's sexually suggestive, though. If they said it's required, this is mature and it's age-gated, I have less of a problem.
I thought that was in an article I had read previously, but maybe not.
If they do that, I have less of a problem because they're not saying they're by doing this, they're saying this isn't sexual content. Amazon's basically saying this is not sexual. They're not. They're saying that it's not sexual content. What if it's used as sexual content? What if the streamer does that? Now you're going to get into all these weird areas that before you, if it wasn't a category, well, okay, it's just you don't. It's not something you do. Yeah, you can walk along on the beach, but now you're not saying, well, I'm going to jump up and down in a floaty for extra tips. Like these are the things that they're probably already happening. As far as I know, there's stuff that happens like this already that isn't talked about. But now what Amazon is doing is basically saying this is okay, and we're now endorsing this content. That's where it's going to be a problem, not just for other streamers saying, well, this is ridiculous, but for advertisers. And this is before we get into God, this is now we're going on dark territory. If they're not saying it's sexual content, so now they're basically saying if you're 14, you could do content like this, and it's okay. That's the weird areas you're now Amazon is putting themselves into, where before they shouldn't have to tiptoe into this pool, which they now are, and that's the problem. This could trigger an adpocalypse type of situation where advertisers are saying, what the fuck is happening, and have multiple advertisers pulling out at the same time. It's bizarre, and I'm shocked that they went this route and said this is the easy way to solve this is that we're going to have a new category and doing this. I don't know what the end game is. I don't know. I'm thinking of all the negatives. What is the positives that they're getting at this? Could they bring in that much more revenue for going into this? If not R-rated territory, heavy PG-13 character, I have no idea. But this is not something that a lot of people are comfortable with. Other streamers aren't comfortable with. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
I personally think it's a bunch of hoopla about not much. I mean, as kids, we all tuned into MTV and watched Spring Break and saw people in bathing suits gyrating all over the beach.
Yeah, but you weren't interacting directly with those people. You weren't potentially giving tips to those people. You weren't potentially being persuaded by those people to get money to give me because I will do something that's titillating.
That's what gets money. I just don't care what people do with their bodies, and I don't think there's really as much concern. I don't think it's opening the Pandora's box that you think it's opening.
So even if the children are involved, you don't think it's a Pandora's box?
I think that it should probably be age-gated.
Yes. I don't see anything saying it's going to be age-gated. If it's age-gated, there's less of a problem. But it's yeah.
Yeah, I would certainly be concerned about kids doing that, like streaming that way. But if they age gate it or say you can't do it unless you're this age, I really don't see there being that big of a deal. And it seems like a pretty simple fix. But they also say that this isn't the end of the policy. They said that this is temporary. At the end of that announcement, they say that this is not the final answer.
I think the point is that they were more concerned about losing advertisers than what direction they wanted their content to go. That to me is the biggest takeaway, is that we want to do something right now to appease advertisers versus maybe addressing something that's could be used for nefarious and would be used for nefarious means. I mean, hell, there was the whole report about whole freaking pedophile networks targeting children's YouTube videos where like little boys and girls were just doing like fucking jumping jacks and stuff like that. And they were like saying, oh, go to this part in the video. Watch. This is now you're interacting with them. You can have creeps interacting with children or vice versa. I don't think I'm comfortable with someone who might be doing something teetering the line of R-rated with children watching and asking them for money or even subscribing or following. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm just not. I don't think that's what it's for. But that's all I'm going to say about that. And, you know, growing up, I was a breakfast cereal hound. I ate it every day in front of Saturday morning cartoons. I ate it as a snack, just bowl after bowl out of bowl. The problem was it was horrible, horrible for your health. But it was delicious. So what can you do? What could you do? I stopped eating cereal for years until Magic Spoon, the nutritious and delicious breakfast cereal. This stuff will change your eating lives.
It is a bit of a breakfast revelation, I do have to say.
Yes.
It has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. There's only 140 calories in that serving, too. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. And they've got flavors. They've got everything you loved as a kid.
Yes.
There's a cocoa, there's a fruity, frosted, peanut butter.
Cinnamon. It's fantastic.
You mix the peanut butter with the chocolate, it's delicious.
I'm not, we talk about products on the podcast here sometimes, and like this is in the upper echelon. This is the S tier of things we have spoken about for you guys to try out, you guys and gals out there. So right now, call to action. Go to magicspoon.com/CU podcast and get a variety pack there. You can mix and match and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code CU podcast at checkout to save $5 off your order. And they are so confident, Magic Spoon, that you'll like it. It's back with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked, but I might ask questions. Why don't you love Magic Spoon? I'll ask it. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/CU podcast and use the code CU podcast to save $5 off. Thank you so much, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. All right, Ian, Netflix. We love Netflix, Ian. We all like watching our Zack Snyder Army of the Dead stuff on there, which we didn't watch yet. We got to watch that. And we all love our superhero stuff and Daredevil. And we all love catching up on good stuff. And Stranger Things has come back, isn't it? Now, though.
Probably.
Netflix is looking to get into the gaming world.
That's right. So Netflix is kind of, they've been talking for a while about wanting to get into gaming and do more interactive content. They've started dipping their toes in this water a few years ago when
not
they did. No, not hot tubs. When they started doing, they did the Black Mirror episode, Bandersnatch.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Which I never watched, but everyone said it was fun. Yeah, I never did it.
It was a choose your own adventure in real time episode with not just multiple pathways. It screwed with your mind because the story would change when you went back and did the same choice again. They had rebranching paths. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. It's just given I'm averse to watching TV to begin with, so it's just harder to get me into it. They also have a show, I guess I've just heard of, called U-verse Wild. I'm not sure what that pertains, but it's another interactive show. And they obviously saw that people like to interact with their media, so they want to get into gaming. It would be some licensed stuff and some of their own sponsored content, like we see with their docuseries and stuff like that, that they said that they would potentially get into. I think as far as I still think personally, we're not there yet technology wise. I just don't think we're there for reliable streaming yet. Stadia, across the board, people are saying it's not exactly reliable. You have the Xbox streaming, Game Pass.
Apple Arcade. Which is really good value at $5 a month.
Apple Arcade is great because it lets you download the games. It's not just streaming.
And plus they have their little boxes. You could play those on your TV, not just on your phone or a tablet. Yeah,
right. You can hook up a controller and everything. Netflix has said that they kind of want to do their own Apple Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what they're looking at. That's the model they're looking at. So what I'd be interested in is, would they do it all streaming? Would they do it with like a required box that could temporarily download the game to keep it from, well, no, because then you'd have to have, then it would be a console. You'd have to obviously have the processors and stuff in there.
See, this Axios report says, I just added that link, a source familiar with Netflix's plan tells Axios to think of it as a smaller Apple Arcade. Apple Arcade isn't that big. Apple Arcade doesn't have hundreds of games. It's a very, very well curated. How many games do you think it has?
About 200 now.
Yeah, it's not several hundred, though. A reference to Apple's offering of high-quality, ad-free mobile games offering to paying subscribers. The Netflix offering will consist of a mix of licensed Netflix intellectual property. Well, that makes sense. We have, Stranger Things game. An original work commissioned from independent studios offered to existing Netflix subscribers. Okay, that sounds very Google Stadia-ish. We're going to have exclusive stuff that we commission to be done.
Correct.
Possibly launching in 2022. Okay, we got a full year or so. Plans are subject to change. They had not ruled out other approaches, including the more complex effort of making games in-house, yikes, or getting games to run on TVs. Oh, geez. What do you mean getting to run on TVs? I don't understand that, run on TVs. You mean run through the hardware on TVs, like on a smart TV? I don't understand that part, because there are smart TV games that come with your TV for free that do run on them. So maybe that's what they're thinking about. But
yeah,
that's weird.
I don't get that part. But
yeah. Yeah. They said they've been dabbling with games for some time. They know about the Witcher show, the Castlevania show, which I watched the first season, was pretty good. They already finished the show. God, they put out these seasons like three a year, seems like. They're doing Assassin's Creed? I had no idea.
First two seasons of Castlevania were very good. The third and fourth seasons were extremely rocky.
They just fall off.
Well, I mean, spoilers.
Go for it.
Spoilers, at the end of the second season, they kill Dracula, and that's like the Castlevania story in a nutshell. It works really well for two seasons. After that, they had to start making shit up. Okay.
Okay. I actually want to watch that at some point. I watched the first, what was it, four or five episodes when it first came out.
The spoiler was not much of a spoiler, but yes.
Does it follow the games for the most part, or somewhat?
The first two seasons kind of follow the arc of a game, yes. Okay.
All right.
The third and fourth seasons, they kind of make stuff up. All right.
Okay. So here's the deal. Netflix. Not that you should have to stay in your lane when it comes to this. You do whatever you want, Netflix. Netflix has obviously already given up market share to Disney Plus, which is, now I'm talking about Hulu and Disney Plus are now under the same company, Disney. Amazon Prime is doing well there with their own offerings. People forget that there's Apple TV offerings. They do their own stuff. I'm not familiar with most of that stuff, but whenever I see a movie, Tom Hanks World War II movie on Apple, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I know budget. Like nothing about Apple TV. It but pops it seems up like every okay. once yeah. in a while, and I'm like, that exists.
It's like, this looks decent, but they have their own ecosystem of hipster people that probably have all Apple products, and that's who likes that stuff, probably. But here's the deal: we know that video games is hard.
Someone told difficult. Me yesterday that only hipsters eat guacamole or something like that. And I was like, so it was all of Mexico hipsters?
Who said that?
And someone online said something about...
Come on. There's a joke about the millennials eating avocado toast. Okay, that's funny. That's kind of
Someone looked at my taco picture and said, only hipsters eat that much
when
guacamole.
When I was in Jersey...
I was like, no, that's the amount of guacamole the Mexican man put on the food.
Whenever you go to Jersey, because there's not avocados in Jersey, but you can get them. We go to On the Border, a better Mexican chain, because everything was fresh. You can make they made it in front of you. They got the rock thing out and did it. It was great. Sorry, what were we talking about? Shit. Video games are hard work.
Yes, they are. I think Netflix is potentially biting. Guac is actually pretty easy.
Okay.
Everyone should make guac because it's not hard.
It's great. Make sure you use lemon juice. It preserves it a little bit longer. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, it's tough to get into this. Google's failed miserably. And Google had probably... The tech to do this.
Cue the Stadia defenders. I'm sure that they'll be.
Coming. Oh, we had a Stadia podcaster come after us.
Oh, did we?
I looked at it, I was like, who's defending this? Oh, he does the Google Stadia podcast. I'm like, are you in Google's peril? This was like a year ago.
Who's upset about our Stadia coverage? Oh, Mr. Stadia.
I'm not saying you couldn't be enthusiastic about a bad gaming product. We see that all the time with people attacking us over one that's going to be pushed back from October. But the point is this. Is that if these big companies with money can't figure this out, at some point you got to say, hey, listen, maybe we shouldn't bother trying this at some point. What Apple Arcade is doing is entirely different because it's already built into their ecosystem of app games. So it's not like they're doing something radically different. They're just saying, okay, instead of paying for each game, here's a subscription for these awesome games that we're curating.
Yeah, they just found a way to block off some of them.
I'm paying $5.
It's already there.
I'm paying $5 a month for games that I'm not playing. So they got me.
Yeah.
But if I want to play it, I'll be like, oh, here's an update to cats killing each other with big sticks. Okay.
I got to figure out how to... You know,
is that a game?
No, I got to figure out how to sync a PlayStation controller to my phone.
Oh, it's just a Bluetooth thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some
but they're good games.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones on
but
there.
The point is that Apple has more money than, you know, most nations. And like I said, they're in the infrastructure. They're in the business of app games. Netflix is not in the business of video games at all. At all. Minus a Choose Your Own Adventure episode of Dark Mirror. A Black Mirror. Black Mirror.
Right.
That's really a Choose Your Own Adventure, a little experimental thing. And that cost them an entire season. They did that episode. They did that movie instead of doing a season of content. They put so like that. That was a sacrifice.
Yeah. So there's work to be done on these, and it's not small.
Hell, I like to see more Choose Your Own Adventure stuff on Netflix.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I
versus pure video games.
I have a feeling we will see Netflix get into video games or game streaming at some point fully in the future. I just think it's bound to happen. But I think what would actually work best for Netflix would be to do. To focus specifically on games that are more similar to interactive movies. I don't like the guy's writing, but David Cage, the guy who does all the did like Heavy Rain, Detroit Become Human,
okay.
Beyond Two Souls, all of those games that are essentially interactive movies.
With some QuickTime stuff thrown in.
Yeah, with QuickTime stuff thrown in. You use a controller, you move the character around, you do things and it changes the outcome of the scene or it can change the story. It's more video gamey than just a choose your own adventure, but it's still at the very heart of it a movie. You're watching a story. There are ways you can't die. You can do poorly and it will change how something happens, but a lot of it is just, yeah, press these buttons. It's not a lot of like super difficult gaming with complex controls. I think that would fit really well. Also because you could stream those and not worry about things necessarily, not worry as much about things like lag.
Sure. It's like now it's a decision and now it affects the outcome. Like this You Versus Wild interactive helping out Bear Grylls. I never watched it before.
Oh, okay. That's what that is.
I never watched it before, but it sounds like that's what it is. Oh, should I eat this bug or not? And then if you eat it, oh, you see him choke and die or something like that. That's why I figured something like that. That could be fun. If that's what your definition of gaming is, that you can use with any like any remote controller. Okay.
Or even that'd if you have to use a video game controller. But like I said, low impact story-based experiences, I think, would do very well.
Up, down, left, right, and a button. I think, I mean, that's what you use. We'll use left, right, and a button for banners.
Just hook a Dragon's Lair chassis up to the front of it. Move, sword.
but that's all you need for most of this interactive stuff.
Move, action.
Move, action. A guy's punching at you. Move, you know, you kick him in the nards. I use nards twice on this podcast. I haven't used it in like 2 years. Yeah, I think Netflix has to be careful. This is me telling Netflix to be careful because we've seen this story before, obviously.
We've seen this story. Yes, we have.
We're seeing it play out with an entrepreneur that thinks he's going to revolutionize gaming as well with a console aimed towards millennial moms. So, like, you stick with what brought you to the dance, Netflix. That's all we're saying.
Patrick? Might I say that you look snappy in your shirt? I believe that's the Planetary Countdown.
And that's the extraterrestrial shirt from Into the Am, and they are sponsoring this segment. They have high-quality, premium apparel, including graphic tees, basic tees, hoodies, and even boxer briefs. There's a nice cut to them. They stand out. Some are like glow-in-the-black light, like this one's a black light shirt. And they're out there, otherworldly themes. There's some down-to-earth themes as well. I like this one. This is the digital space tee, very 80s design here. You got a little space shuttle on the top, nice little graphic on the bottom there, and the sun and the sunset. Really eye-pleasing, eye-popping stuff. And they got bundles as well. Right now you can get 3 graphic tees for $60 or 3 basic tees for $45. And right now they're having a Memorial Day sale. That's right. May 28th to the 31st, they're having a Memorial Day sale, weekend sale. You'll get 20% off your order, plus an additional 10% off if you use our discount link. You can click on it below on YouTube, or if you're on the podcast, you're listening, you know, you can also use code CONTRI, and you'll get 10% off these very comfortable shirts, and their other gear. Again, use code CONTRI to save an additional 10%, or click on the link in the YouTube description down there. Click on it. Go look good and feel good with Into the AM. All right, Ian, we are in the age now of Pokemon cards where there's a three-year backlog to get them graded, and people on YouTube opening up packs of these sort of things. Baseball cards blowing up the past few years. I went to the swap meet a few months ago, and there was a baseball card dealer for new baseball cards. I said, really? Okay, you're selling packs of cards now.
It's okay. It's gotten fucking crazy.
Limited edition toys that are coming out every week, it seems, based upon old 80s and 90s properties, whether it's Ninja Turtles, He-Man, G.I. Joe, what have you. We're in the age now of nostalgia perfectly meeting consumerism into this marriage of spend as much money as you can to get this stuff potentially that not just you'll enjoy with your happy, warm, fuzzy feels, but it can be worth money. And this has been happening more and more, I'd say, over the past maybe 2 years, 3 years for sure. Going back to even Comic-Con and having all their exclusive toy sets where you got to show up that day to get them and flipping them on eBay. So we were going to talk about this beforehand, but at the same time, good old Jim Sterling, who does the Jimquisition, does his rant videos.
I like that name. I just think it's very clever.
The Jimquisition?
I think it's very clever, yes.
We talk about Jim Sterling every once in a while. He does like Carney style videos with good salient points. Done like, I mean, he's into pro wrestling, the guy himself personally. So like, they're basically promos, long-winded promos about a topic.
He's good on the mic.
He's good on the mic. Yes, snappy dresser as well. And he talked about basically the topic of have millennials killed nostalgia. Basically, on the back of all the bad articles that come out, like have millennials killed this industry, the diamond industry? Have they killed? I don't know, collecting china plates. You know, because we don't care about that. And silverware. I was talking about, like, we don't care about silver and china plates. Hey, Ian, here's a china set for your fucking wedding. No, we're not doing that. That died with the boomers, basically. Maybe older Gen X, you know. But have millennials killed nostalgia? And he talks about the Pokemon cards, and he talks about stuff that he's even into. He even admits, I'm into, like, the Moblins, the little rubbery.
Boglins.
Boglins. Not Mob. Boblins is Legend of Zelda.
Moblins is Zelda.
Boglins, yes. Which were more uncommon toys that I didn't know a kid that had them, but I'd heard of them. Little rubbery puppets with little arms,
little
and faces.
Goofy faces. Yes. They come in like a little cage,
which they've remade. I met the guy who created them at a convention last year. They've made new ones the past few years through Kickstarter. So we've had like a resurgence of Kickstarters getting these properties back off the ground, companies reinvesting them and redoing it. But now we've hit this sort of gross point where, if you say something, what's the point of something being over monetized or over capitalized on? The point is when a huge organization like Target says, we are no longer selling Pokemon cards because we fear for the safety of customers. Because asshole adults are going in, running in as soon as the shit is put on the shelf in order to buy it to either try to collect it to win their lottery and find stuff, or to scalp the cards and to sell it at such a high price. And that's the weird point that we are at. It has always existed, though. That's the one thing about Jim's video that I don't agree with. This has existed always in some way, shape, or form. I've seen it personally going back to the 90s in terms of buying collector stuff that first came out. Well, like when the starting lineup hockey figures first came out, collectors ran to the KB toy stores right when it opened and got them all. Little Patrick couldn't get Brian Leach because some assholes ran and got it before him at 7 a.m. because I was 5 minutes late or 10 minutes late. Something like this has always happened. Spawn figure collecting in the 90s. Power of the Force figures in 95 when they came back. You had tons of collectors saying, oh, this would be the next big thing. It's Star Wars, the first new Star Wars toys in 10 years. They went and bought this stuff. I think that with the combination of having the social media awareness with the internet to sell this shit, and now you have things like NFTs and people spending way more much money than they probably should. You have this weird, weird perfect storm of nostalgia becoming our worst nightmare. And I think that's what was the most salient point of Jim's video is that.
What's that?
this perfect storm of all that's happening.
And that's what I think it is, too. So, like you said, obviously we can go back to the 90s. Tamagotchis were hard to get when they first came out. You can even go back to the 80s.
Beanie Babies? You ever hear of Beanie Babies?
Beanie Babies. You can go back to the 80s. You can look at stuff like Tickle Me Elmo. You can go back to the 80s and look at Cabbage Patch Dolls.
Yes.
Here's where I think there is a lot of difference. So, when you look at stuff like the Cabbage Patch Dolls, when you look at stuff like...
Tickle Me Elmo.
Even Beanie Babies. These were all things that were hard to get. And yes, there was money attached to them. But, and I don't think this is just looking back rosily, at least with some of those, you could conceivably say that people were buying that to own it.
For children to enjoy.
For children to enjoy or to own. Whether or not you were a kid buying a Beanie Baby, I don't care. A lot of those people who were going out of their way to get them, they were having a tough time to getting it, and it was difficult, but they wanted to own it. The problem, I think, with this generation...
At first, for Beanie Babies, it spiraled out of control.
I think the big problem with this generation is... every generation's had its nostalgia poisoning. I mean, I remember the Spencer's Gifts, and it's not unique. Spencer's Gifts in the 1990s was decked out like, that 70s show.
Lava lamps?
Yeah. now it's the 80s. But... This is so cynical and finely tuned to generate a profit. And I think that's the difference here. People are running out to buy those Pokemon cards to immediately... They're not opening them. They're buying them to immediately flip those packs online.
Well, people were flipping Tickle Me Elmos. They were.
I realize, but the social media, the fact that everyone's always aware of it, eBay, online marketplaces, like you said earlier about Jim saying it's a perfect storm, I think that's what it is, but it just seems to be more finely tuned for finance.
I think it's more social media, because without social media, it's a lot tougher to get the FOMO out there, the fear of missing out, of saying, like, okay, so in the 90s, late 90s was Tickle Me Elmo, was it the biggest toy, what was that, 97, 96, something like that? When was Tickle Me Elmo? The internet was still relatively new to a lot of people, but you had news stories coming out. Tickle Me Elmo is the hottest thing. I saw those all the time. So that alone caused parents to be like, okay, Tickle Me Elmo is something I should look for. And yes, they had commercials. I remember my aunt trying to get my smaller, she was young cousin at the time, a Tickle Me Elmo, and was having trouble getting it. And there were people that scalped things back then. eBay was fairly new, but you had that, even though most people weren't using it. But it was always, I know a guy that has it. I know a guy's got a couple. That's how that stuff worked. That's how it worked with Cabbage Patch Kids in 84 and 85. It was always, I know someone that got an extra one. I knew, that's how it was. Or maybe they fell off the back of a truck.
Right.
Or maybe an employee bought them early if they weren't stolen. So this has always been going on. My uncle used to do some of this more sketchy stuff. My uncle always knew a guy that knew,
knew a guy.
My Uncle Joe. He's my Uncle Joe from fucking Bayonne. Come on. Come on. It's my Uncle Joe. I love him. But, with the internet, though, not just tells you about the product and tells you about why you want it now, it tells you about the money-making opportunities attached to this that weren't around potentially in the 90s. Well, QVC and Home Shopping with their Beanie Babies, they did fucking go into, look at this last year's Beanie Baby. This one's worth $1,000. They did. They were responsible for that. But at that point, though, it was older people. And it didn't bleed into the kids as much, because you can still find Beanie Babies for kids. Not every Beanie Baby was worth a lot of money. Kids can still get their Beanie Baby fixed. Yeah, I want that hard to find, Shamu Beanie Baby. Okay, well, here's another one.
Right.
This is everything, though, you can't find. You can't get any of these Pokemon cards, apparently. You can't find them.
Nope. And people and the games are bad, too. I mean, it literally, Pokemon as a whole is just a fucking nightmare right now. Fucking loose copies of the Game Boy Advance games going for $150, near $200. These games were printed in fucking piles and piles. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, who do you blame? You blame millennials. I think the one thing, though, that's a little bit different, and this goes, it's all connected to NFTs to some degree, and it's connected to crypto, is that it goes back to, the boomers, going back to, like, the greatest generation helped build the country up after World War II and the Depression. The boomers basically fucking strip mined what the greatest generation did. And pulled most of the ladder up, which is what Jim was saying, and I agree with some of that. Pulled the ladder up.
I agree with that. Yes.
So millennials at this point then are like, well, how do I get mine? How do I make my money? and how am I comfortable with my house, two dogs, and a picket fence? How do I get my American dream? It's been perverted either by technology or the fact that they really are that desperate, is that I will take a gamble on crypto. I will put all my life savings into Dogecoin. I will buy these fucking NFTs and take the gamble, this huge gamble, life savings gambles of either win it big or I'm back to where I was, but wasn't that bad before anyway, I'll just try again. So if, I think the expression I saw was like, not like usually it's like, oh, it's the ladder of life that you climb up. Now it's a potential trampoline where it's like you try to bounce up immediately, but you can fall on your ass.
Yeah, you're not going to grow into a comfortable life.
No, it's not growth over time. It's either all or nothing.
You may have very comfortable points in your life, followed by low points again, followed by high.
But yeah. but the theory is that, well, since I'm such at a low point anyway, I'll take that loan out to buy this crypto and strike it big. It's you're basically gambling with your life. That's what a lot of this comes. I'm not saying this is all people buying these Pokemon cards, but it's that mentality of, well, I have to do this. This is the way I get money now, is I go and I run over other people. I've seen the video footage. Run over people to get fucking boxes of Pokemon cards. And these are adults. These are grown men doing this. These are, so fuck the kids. They can't even get anything, by the way. Fuck the Zoomers. Because I want to get my box of cards that I could flip for whatever. What are they going for? What's a box of new Pokemon cards going for?
I have not checked.
Like you wish that the Pokemon company can just pump all this shit out and flood the market, so then kids could have stuff to play with,
right,
and fuck the adults trying to invest in it and to scalp it.
And that's what sucks so much. The Pokemon trading card game is a shitload of fun. I love it. And when lockdown started, I was like, time for me to organize my cards, make a couple decks, and get back into this. And I was like, oh, I guess that's not going to be happening now.
So what's the newest set this year? Like, what is it?
I don't know. They put out sets very, very frequently.
I'm just trying to see what a set of cards even goes for. I'm like, I'm trying to see, like, what is it worth the time that I got to get up 7 a.m. in the morning, run my ass to Target against other grown men, and fight over boxes of cards. Sword and Shield box, booster box, $200. Buy it now. 79 sold. What does that go for? What would the retail of that be?
200 is what they're selling it for.
What would retail be? 50?
No. A retail box? A full box of boosters?
What's the pack cost?
About $5. I bought boxes of Pokemon cards before. It's about 100 and anywhere from 95 to 120.
Okay, so they're doubling their money, kind of, if they're going to Target and buying
close,
it.
Yes.
Something like that. Jesus, is that worth it to do something like that?
No. I mean, I don't think so.
Booster box, Silver Lance, and Jet Black set, $175 from Japan. So it seems like you can't get them in stores. You got to buy them directly from someone who already has a bunch of them, or wholesalers. I know someone that's wholesaled, who's bought wholesale stuff, a box of cards, and they just sit on them for years now because they know that in 5-6 years from now, this is going to be worth a certain amount of money. I'll just sell it then. So I'm sure that goes on as well.
Probably.
I'm sure there's people that...
Absolutely. There are people doing this now, looking at what a cost of base Pokemon from the 90s was going for now. And they're like, well, if I just sit on this box for fucking
20 years,
it'll be worth something.
Mm.
That's a
gamble.
It's a bold gamble.
It's a bold gamble. But I know people that have done that in the shorter term. Yeah, 5 years later, we know it can go for this. So I'll buy $2,000 worth of boxes of this card set, we'll just say. If I know, looking historically, it'll at least double or triple, then maybe it's worth that gamble over time. Eventually, you know, it runs out. I mean, the interest has to run out. So I don't know. Do you see a different mindset, even though, amongst people our age, maybe slightly older, slightly less, the ex-millennials or older Gen X, about spending the amount of money going back on this stuff versus what our parents did? Because, like, my father, he brought me to the toy shows in the 90s, and that's why I said there's always been nostalgia. Yes, there was more heavy advertising in the 80s, and let's be honest, the cartoons of the 80s were miles ahead of the cartoons from the 70s and 60s. First off, it wasn't just, yes, they heavily advertised toys for us. The toys got a lot better. The cartoons got a lot better, too.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Quest is not G.I. Joe. You know, the Hanna-Barbera crap is not Transformers or Ninja Turtles. They're not even close to, like, the level of entertainment. I can't watch that 70s stuff. I couldn't when I was a kid. Yeah, it's not.
I couldn't watch it then either.
It's garbage in stories. The toys sucked.
I've never been one who got nostalgic for Saturday morning cartoons because so much of it was filler trash.
but overall, though, better than 80s was leagues ahead of the 70s and 60s. So it's not just because, well, TV heavily advertised. They always advertise toys for kids. That said, my father in the 90s when you know, he was Jesus Christ our age in the 90s, when I went to toy shows, I was looking for Star Wars toys. He was looking for Mark's toys that he grew up with, you know, in the 50s and 60s, the little toy army men. And, you know, you had your Revolutionary War set, the, you know, the little plastic. Right. That's what he grew up with. There was no action figures in the 50s. You know, that started coming with the late 70s. G.I. Joes were still dolls. The late 70s, when you had the 3¾ guys, that also helped to revolutionize things as well, because now toys became cheaper. That's a whole other conversation, though, that there weren't little action figures until the late 70s. And that partially because of probably, I think, the oil crisis and cost of plastics. Whole other conversation. But in the 90s, it was in 80s, model trains that the boomers grew up with. Mark's toys just worth a lot more, and it was stuff that they enjoyed. And that fell off. This will fall off to us as well, but yes, it's a weird perfect storm of the better IPs, social media, and now this sort of get rich quick stuff that now has frenzied us the past couple years. Is that it?
That's about it.
Did I cover it all?
Yeah, I think we got it.
All right. Ian, we have a Patreon.
Patreon.com/CU podcast. I do writing. We do hangouts. We get the full video podcast.
You do.
And we do these polls, these question and answer polls.
We have a 2/3, 1/3 split on our poll this week.
Really?
Right? 67-33. I didn't download or look at it particularly.
Well, I'll be.
Well, it's usually 66 2/3 repeating. But in second place, what would make you sell just about all your game collection? 33%. Not getting the respect I think it should. And in first place, how did you discover a very good game that wasn't well known, I guess, at the time?
So, it's still not very well known. The one that I thought of that I really wanted to talk about was Board Game Top Shop for the original PlayStation. And this came out at near the end of the original PlayStation's life, like, run. And there were all of these, like, cheap budget games that were starting to be released. I don't know if you remember the Spec Ops series. There was, like, five fucking Spec Ops games.
Five?
There was a lot of them, and they were all, like, $9.99. You know, and they all sucked.
Snap the guy in the head.
But people yeah. bought them.
They sucked? Really? They weren't that good? Okay.
And then there was the A1 Games line, which had such titles as The Shooting Game, Cards, Bowling.
You want any Triceratops? No.
I know. I think one was like RPG Treasure. Basically, they all had like one or two word names that clearly and succinctly described what you were buying.
Okay.
And they were all like budget titles, and they weren't very good. But I got into the habit of picking them up used, because even like brand new used, they were like $5, $6, $7. Like, they were cheap, and I wanted to see what they were. Well, one of them was called Board Game Top Shop. And I remember walking into my local video game store and seeing it on the used rack. And I looked at my friend Jay and I said, "What is this? I think I have to have it." Because on the front, it shows like it says Board Game Top Shop has a little boy dressed in like a frog suit on the front of it.
Okay.
And I'm like, "What the shit is this?" So I bought it and took it home. I was living in my first apartment at the time. And unwrapped it and sat down and started to play it. And it turned out to be a extremely good Monopoly-like game.
What console is this?
PlayStation. And it takes place in a mall. And there's a bunch of different
malls. There's a cat in a car going meow. Oh, my first chance to get rich. Money, money, money. There's a rich cat in the game.
Yeah, the game is great. The game is legitimately amazing. So it's the game takes place in a mall, and you roll a dice and you move around the mall. And when you land on spots, you can open businesses in those spots. Each floor has different valued spots. So you get the lowest tier shops on the bottom and the most expensive tiered shops on top. If you open the spaces, if you open a spot and then open something next to it, it expands the store. As the store expands, you can stock more items. When people land on a store, they have to buy an item from your store. If your store is out of items when they land on it, they can buy you out and turn it into a different store.
That's interesting.
It's a really good game. Incredibly clever. as far as I can tell, it's not ripped off wholesale from anything else. I mean, obviously, it's got Monopoly, you know, like stuff in it, but it's not like just a clone of something with a new coat of paint.
Sure.
The story is, for what it is weird. The game has a lot of charm. The sprite art is good. And we played this so much at my first apartment.
So wait, how did you discover this game?
Like I said, by buying all of these budget titles, I stumbled upon this one and decided
it was just sitting there for five bucks.
It was at the local game store.
It's hard to find. They didn't make a lot of them. I'm looking on eBay.
How much is it?
$50. Buy it now.
Well, I guess it's getting more notable. I think I have two copies of it.
Oh, man, may I buy one for me and maybe give me a deal?
It's a great game, though.
You have two copies of it?
It was not always $50. It used to be like a couple of bucks, and I would buy literally every copy that I came across, and I'd give them out to people.
Oh, I was gonna say you could have cornered the market. No, it looks like $38. One went up for $18. Looks like the only ones are buy it nows, but it looks like you can get $50 for it.
Of all those A1 Games budget releases, that's probably the only one that's actually worth a damn.
Oh, there's a kid the frog suit. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
Okay. This company put out a bunch of other budget titles.
So. The company released a bunch of budget titles, but not all of them were developed by the same people, different developers for each one.
Sure. Okay. So how was you literally just said, okay, there's a budget bin of games and I'm going to fucking put
my this was pre-social media. I used to always go to my local game shop. I hung out there a lot. I knew the people who worked there and I just started buying these budget releases and I stumbled on this one.
The only budget one is goes back to computer games. I always talk about how awesome the KB Toy Store computer game bin was.
Because
it's not like KB specialized in computer games. It wasn't a huge section, but somehow they got stuff there that was either a couple years old or not the newest, but they did have some stuff that was, it was weird. KB, I wish I knew more about this or remember. But they had a bin of like the Sierra games or adventure games and stuff. Like I remember buying Goblins 2, and like was like that's an interesting looking game. I'll try it. I was like, oh, it was like $10.
Cocktail Vision, I think.
Huh?
Cocktail Vision developed that.
I thought it was Dynamics. Dynamics published it.
Published it.
Big box PC. I wish I still had that. Never got far, and it was too difficult for 11-12 year old Pat. Anyway, so like that was a bargain bins are a great way because you can take a chance on $10 versus $50. Yeah. Bucks. You can take a chance. I took a chance on seeing boobs in Noctropolis, never got that far, but you know what? It only cost me $10 to get that game at Computer City.
Noctropolis comes up again.
Or CompUSA, yes. I think we sort of discount nowadays about the influence. Potentially, back when you were a child, but again, this is pre-internet. That's why I like being an ex-lennial. I'm the last generation that, saw what it was before the internet or not. Having friends that would introduce you to new games randomly that you would never, ever, ever, when you go over the house, never, ever, ever play. I remember playing Joe and Mac for the first time. The Super Nintendo was still fairly new. I never heard of the arcade game before, Caveman Ninja. And it's like, oh, this is a fun game. This is goofy characters. Maybe I see it in Nintendo Power. It doesn't mean it like stuck in my mind, though. But something like that, like a Joe and Max sort of game, is a perfect example of a game that I don't think ever, without word of mouth, would have been bought by a lot of people. It's not like I don't remember seeing commercials for it. It wasn't featured on, it wasn't like a heavy feature in Nintendo Power, I don't think. Was it on the cover? I don't think it was on the cover. That's a great example. Going over to good old Billy's house. Like Billy had... he had Genesis stuff. There's no way I'd be able to learn about Genesis games outside of TV commercials. But he had a bunch of like the first year of Genesis before pre-Sonic Genesis.
Right.
That weird, is this going to be another failure period?
Yeah.
Just sports games and arcade titles. But, he had Buster Douglas Boxing, which was all right. I would never have played that game. And he had Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. I never would have played or knew anything about that game. If I didn't play it at Billy's house, never would discover that game. Never remember seeing, the arcade game is entirely different. Never even remember seeing the arcade game at the time. It's probably hard to find an arcade game. So
Moonwalker?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only seen it once. I played it at
three-player weirdo isometric game.
I think I played it in Long Island.
Yeah. That's a game like that I would never have discovered for sure. But then you get into, I don't know if you can count, magazine stuff, but you think you have to count magazines because there's no way. Magazines are responsible for a lot of the marketing of video games, even up until I'd say the mid 90s. A lot of the popular games would get commercials. Some of the weird, I still discover some of the NES games that got commercials that I find when I search for the NES Marathon every year. I'm like, oh, I've discovered this commercial. I never saw most of those commercials when I was a kid. Yeah, I would have saw Captain Skyhawk commercials, but I never saw a Hudson's Adventure Island commercial when I was a kid. Saw one. They had one, I think, for one of the games. I never saw one. So how did you discover games like that? Well, you saw a little, like, Top Secret episode. There was a Top Secret commercial episode. There was, using Secret Agent Man as the you know, the 60s thing. It's like he's an assassin. He's not a secret agent, but that's how they sold it to kids. But I saw Nintendo Power. I'm like, oh, there's a little. I think it was the second or third issue, or maybe the first issue. They talked about the game a little bit. There's a little overview about the game. Oh, it gave you a feeling for the game. That's how you discovered these games. And the big one we always come back to, magazines, going over to your friend's house. You probably have a story about your friend having a game that you never knew about. You're like, oh, look at that. Like my Kevin had TNC Surf designs. I was like, I never would have played that game.
Right.
If Kevin didn't have that game, I never would have played that game. Never would have discovered that game. And it's a fun game, even though it has its flaws. But I go back to rentals. Renting games. That was like the version of bargain bin stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I can take a chance. A mom or my allowance, because renting a game in the late 80s was about $2 to $3, roughly like that. Then it went up to a little bit more in the 90s, but it was like $3 to rent a game. Going to Magic Star Video, there's no way I would have ever played Mickey Mouse Capade if it wasn't a rental. There's no way I would have done that.
Sure.
There's no way I would have taken a chance on Wizards and Warriors, even though I hate it at the time. I think nowadays I probably would have a better time playing it. I think it was too hard to jump when I was probably like 8 years old.
Wizards and Warriors?
Yeah.
That game's not great.
It's clunky, but people like it. It's sold. But again, I'm not taking that chance. Like, how do you play those games? There's no internet. How do you discover those games back then? There's no way. That's not, obviously, it's not a very good game. I'd argue that Mickey Mouse Capade is probably a decent game. Not a great game, but a decent game, Mickey Mouse Capades.
I like it.
Yeah. But no, I'm not discovering these games if it wasn't for renting them. God damn it. Like, that's the one thing where, like, oh, I think we still need that. Yeah, but nowadays, it's like, well, you have YouTube videos and demos to take the place of that. It's not the same as taking that risk and being stuck with the one game for 2 days. It's not the same. I'm not just cranky old man. There's something about being forced to play something that's almost liberating, you know?
Yeah.
Forced to have less selection. Frank Cifaldi said, not for resale, it forces you to be a more interesting person, he argues, having less choice. Because you go out of your way to try stuff you never would.
Yep, I agree.
You probably were stuck with the game one time, like, I wouldn't play this fucking game, but now, you know, it's what I got.
Yeah, I'm trying to... lots of games like that. Kung Fu Heroes is one that I always think of.
Which I've grown to adore, by the way.
I love that game now, but there was a... I hated it when I first got it, played it.
Did I review that for the book, or you did?
Got into it. Hated it again in my teenage years, and lately I've been really into it. I downloaded. Oh, it's on the Switch NES streaming service, and I've been playing it on there.
I gave it 3 stars. Above average game.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun. Did I review that?
I thought I reviewed that.
Where's the review in my app here? Oh, this is the beta of the new app. Oh, not the upgrade. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's what it comes down to. Friends, house, magazine, renting games. Or bargain bin, I guess. That's how you can discover a very good game that wasn't well known. Nowadays, you got to really probably dig in Steam and be like, okay, what has someone not reviewed or rated? You know, how do you discover something like that nowadays?
Right.
Or a friend just goes, hey, try this weird game out.
That's it.
That's it. All right, Ian, we got voice messages you can listen to. You can listen to. No, you can't listen to them. You listen to them now. You can send them at anchor.fm/ICU podcast, and you could tell us we're cool if you want, or you can hate on us. Try to do better with the trolling attempts, though. Maybe.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is David calling from the San Gabriel Valley, and this question is for both of y'all. Is there any chance in the future that a country cut will ever come out of any of the punk videos that you've both been in? And if so, what would be the Jared Leto Joker Jesus moment? Of that cut.
Country cut.
The Jared Leto Joker Jesus version of that? Not sure what he's trying to get at. We've done about 5 videos together. Stadium events, anticipation, the 5th anniversary one, stadium events, did I say that?
Yeah.
Couple others. The most fun we had was anticipation, I think. Because of the we just riffed on the game.
Yeah, that was the most fun.
It was almost like a let's play.
I was gonna say that one. I don't think there's really. I mean, you would know, but I don't think there's any videos we've done where there's been like whole scenes that you just got rid of. But there's probably stuff that you left on the cutting room floor for the anticipation video.
Oh yeah, there's lots of stuff of us riffing on. I trimmed down the best stuff. Then of course Ian gets in the epic fight with Donkey Kong, which we love. Ian loved filming that.
Yeah, loved it. Loved it.
Oh, he also was in the original NWC one, where I threw him against the wall a couple times.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry if I roughed you up.
That's fine.
Method acting. It's got to be believable.
Yeah, it's all good.
But you did great. Oh, of course, the Caltron 6-1. That was too long. Here's the thing about my writing. I've gotten more economical my writing going forward. I realized not to let things play out as long. And with my editing. So if I went back, these videos would be shorter. If I went back, I'd actually cut... For pacing, like second here or there, 2 seconds. I actually would cut these down if I went back. They wouldn't be longer. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So some of them are too long looking back. I can't rewatch them. Except for track and field is probably my crowning achievement. Is a track and field video. I still think it's my best video. Just because of Frank and my stupid fucking outfit. And Ian, thanks Ian for help filming that.
That was fun. That one was all
right. That actually was fun.
That one was all right.
Because I was suffering and dehydrated. My girlfriend, Tom, I come back in this fucking silver 80s shoot, and I'm like,
I remember, oh, God.
Heat stroked. And I'm like, oh, hey, honey. She's looking at me like, I'm dating this fucking asshole, basically.
What did I do?
Instead of spending a Sunday morning with a beautiful woman, I'm like outside 90 degree heat in a fucking sweatsuit. what's the next one here? Oh, Justin. Remember Justin who ran for mayor of Austin?
I do.
We have an update on him. Justin Muccaluso was running for mayor. He left a nice little message for us. I checked on Ballotpedia, excellent website, and he didn't get in last place, Justin.
That's good.
He didn't get in last place, but he got 0.1% of the votes.
Oh.
At 207 votes total. So good for you. There was about 12 people that ran for mayor, all nonpartisan, which is interesting. I don't know if that's a thing in Austin or... There's no denomination for anyone. I mean, that's not a thing for mayor there. But there was 2 people. Ron Nierenberg beat Greg Brockhaus for the title there of mayor. All right, next one here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Joe from Connecticut. And I was wondering, what games do you like to play with your pets? We recently just got a puppy, and she loves to watch me play Animal Crossing. Thanks. Been watching the podcast for a while, and you're doing a great job. Right. Keep it up.
What does Spike like to watch you play?
Everything. If I'm play, when I pick up a video game controller, that's Spike's cue to make sure he's right here on my lap. Loves to get in the way. I don't think
he just knows. He's like, I'm gonna.
I don't think he prefers anything more so than other games. But yes, he does like to be on. He loves to sit on our laps when we're playing games. He definitely pays attention.
I don't remember my cats of yesteryear ever caring about me playing a video game. I don't remember Cuddles ever doing anything. Fajita. Blue screen my PC in the late 90s a couple times. He would just flop down on the keyboard. You know, back when you hit more like 4 keys, which was fucking fuck up Windows 95, you know, at the time, or 98. It's like, thanks, Fajita. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Hey, Ian and Pat. This is Jason from Texas. Big fan of your show. Just wanted to ask you both if you actually, I'm sure you've been in the past, but since you live in San Diego, what do you miss about going to Comic-Con? I haven't been in years, but I know a lot of people in the past, before COVID, were complaining that Hollywood hijacked Comic-Con, supposedly. But what do you miss about going to conventions in general, but especially Comic-Con, which was actually a lot of fun to do back in the day? So just wanted to ask. Thanks for the show, guys. Keep it up.
Thanks, Jason. I miss seeing some of the stuff. I miss looking at the comics. I miss looking at some of the cosplayers. Sometimes you bump into a celebrity. It could be fun. For, like Frank, historically, almost knocked over Scott Green one time. He ran into Quentin Tarantino looking for comics one time. He ran into Rosario Dawson.
Scott Green? Seth Green?
Seth Green. Not Scott Green. I'm sorry. Seth Green. He literally ran into Seth Green, almost knocked him over.
No, I remember you telling me. I was trying to remember.
And Rosario Dawson was on the floor at a table hanging out. This is like, I guess, 10, 11 years ago before she was like a superstar. And like, I never saw this stuff before. But anyway, so that's, yeah, once you got to the 2000s, early 2010s, yes, it became a lot more radicalized with Hollywood taking over chunks of it by the late 2000s, early 2010s. But no, I just miss walking around. I miss looking at the weird stuff. Maybe it's good to have the year off from it. Maybe it was good to have that year in between.
Well, it's going to be 2 years now. Well, they're doing November.
Do November, 3 days. That'll be big-ish. I'm going.
It's a weird fucking time to do it.
Why? People still go.
Black Friday weekend? Strange.
Black Friday doesn't count anymore.
Very strange.
Buy stuff online.
I love Comic-Con. I know over the years it's become kind of hip to not like Comic-Con, like you said, because Hollywood, you know, it's been bought out and ruined by Hollywood. Fuck it. I have fun like every year I go. I always have a good time. And it's not even so much about the convention itself. It's that Comic-Con always brings people into town that I want to see. There's always friends that are in town that I want to see. It's the one time a year that I actually, you know, hang out and do anything in the gas lamp. It's just a really good time. I like the feel. I like walking around. I've even curbed like my buying a ton, but I still just like walking around the convention.
Last time I think I spent $20 the whole time. I don't buy anything.
Yeah, the first couple times I went to Comic-Con, like, you know, over a decade ago, I was spending hundreds, and now it's like I think I spent maybe $60.
I'll look for a few trade paperbacks, half price. That's what I buy. But I don't buy toys anymore.
But I love it. And Vonnie's always looking. Vonnie always makes sure that she's got her list with her of stuff to look for. And sure. She actually does hunt comics. So it's fun to like go there
go
with someone
the
who's actually into comics and go through the stacks and be part of the hunt.
I used to help Frank go through. Let's see. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is CU Podcast Memes from Los Angeles, California.
Oh.
I was calling to ask, how do you feel about people saying Ness and Snez? I think they're okay. I don't like it, but particularly what bothers me is younger people always say Super Mario Bros. They never say brothers. That really bothers me. Saying bros once in a while is fine, but how do you feel about canonical pronunciation of Super Mario Bros. For younger gamers?
Well, it's ignorance about what these terms actually are, and I had to look this up because I always mixed up an acronym versus an initialism. SNES and NES are initialisms, like FBI. Say the letters out loud, and this is canonical with Nintendo. Nintendo never said SNES or NES. They say NES, and it's actually Super NES technically. Nintendo never actually said SNES. It's always Super NES. That's technically what it is. An acronym is like NASA, where you don't pronounce National Aviation and Science Agency. Is that, did I get that right? You just say NASA, like you kind of make it a word. That's an acronym. Brothers, B-R-O-S, period, is an abbreviation, children. You don't say bros. It is a divide between younger and old people I've seen. They say like Smash Bros instead of Smash Brothers. I do see that. Maybe it's easier to say that. You don't want to pronounce the brothers. I'm getting into my editing grammar mode. But yes, you don't say Snez and Nez. It is a divide as well, I think, with people. So.
Made me realize that I don't follow like any of those rules all the way through. It's NES and Super NES or SNES. Mm-hmm. I kind of think of it. I do say Super NES, I think, more than anything. But Super Mario Brothers, I say... But I do call Smash Brothers Smash Bros.
Really?
Yeah.
You go Smash Bros. Because it's just easier. You don't say an extra syllable Smash Bros.
Yeah, I think it's
like one word.
Honestly, I think it's like you said, it's just one syllable. But I think it is. I think it's laziness from constantly calling the other store having to deal with Smash Bros. It's just Smash Bros.
Or you just said you have Smash. They'll be like,
Smash.
Okay.
I probably say Smash more than Smash Bros. But I don't think I've ever called it. I'm trying to think of if I've ever called it Smash Brothers, and I don't think I have.
Super. No one says Super Smash Bros. No one says the actual full name.
No.
By the way, that's going to be the last thing I review for the certain N64 guidebook, Super Smash Brothers. Super Smash.
Hey, guys. Mike from Michigan here.
Mike!
I am completely and 100% obsessed with the PlayStation 1.
Whoa.
What are your guys' favorite PlayStation 1 games, if any? And are there any really rare ones that you would absolutely kill to have? Thanks. Be safe and have a great one.
Thanks, Michael. I'm not a PS1 person. Historically, I have a bunch of games on the rotisserie over there. So I'm not really the guy to ask. Ian's the guy to ask on that one.
So a lot of games. I love the PlayStation 1. Parasite Eve, Saga Frontier, Legend of Mana. Those are three of my favorite RPGs. They're all on that system. I also really like Trap Gunner, which I think I've even talked about a little bit show before. Can't Stop Mr. Domino.
Just driving all the prices up. Whenever you mention a PS1 game, I look it up, it's like $100.
Incredible Crisis, I enjoyed. And I love the Busta Groove series.
Oh, yes.
No, the dancing one, not the bubble, not the bubble popping, not Busta Move.
Did I play Busta Groove ever? Busta Groove. What does that look
love
like?
Love those games.
What type of game is that?
Rhythm game.
So it's on a pad?
No.
Hybrid music fighting game.
But I enjoy
I don't think I ever played this before.
Ridge Racer Type 4, probably my favorite racing game, period.
I'm sure he has that, probably. Does he have that one? I wonder. He says he's trying to collect all of them? I don't know. All right, next.
Hey, Ian, Pat. This is James from the middle of England.
Hey.
About 5 minutes from Sherwood Forest.
Oh.
I think when I was about 9 years old-ish, we were playing through Mario Brothers 3 for the first time. I figured out that if you blew the second warp whistle in the warp zone, it would take you straight to World 8. At the time, no guides, no magazines, no YouTube, nothing to tell me that that was a good thing. I thought I was a gaming genius. I thought I'd figured out something that no one else could have possibly figured out.
No one.
Never had that feeling again, unfortunately. Oh. So my question is for both of you. Have you ever had any experiences like that, past or present, if you avoid guides and help on the internet, where you thought you must be a gaming genius?
Were you a gaming genius, Ian?
Never. I've never been a gaming genius.
Finding a hidden cache of weapons in Wolfenstein?
But I did think my parents were gaming geniuses. My parents found the first warp zone in Mario without, you know, magazines or guides or anything
like
that.
They just ran on the top and like,
they're like, let's see if we can do it. And sure enough, you could. And I remember that clearly because that's when I think I realized that I loved video games. I was like, there's secret shit in here?
Yeah, I mean, the original Super Mario Brothers had so much that wasn't done before that people, not that they sleep on it, but don't tell me that game isn't a genius game. No, it's not as good as, shut the hell up.
It's as good as whatever you're going to say.
Yes. Shut up. Because you can't fucking ride in a dinosaur doesn't mean it's a worse game. Okay. I'm skipping that one. This one. Here we go.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Abram from Louisiana. I was just wondering why you guys have never mentioned Fightcade, or more specifically, Fightcade 2. That's a great platform. And just wondering why we never hear anything about it from you guys.
Because I don't know what it is. I had to look it up. I had no idea what this is.
I do actually have a rough idea of what this
software
is.
Software client used to enable network multiplayer play of various arcade and home console systems via emulation. Oh, so it's an emulation network solution.
Yes, and I think it works with MAME, I think.
Oh, nice.
Uses networking middleware from GGPO, so it has rollback netcode. What I've seen it big for is people will do like bottom tier fighting game tournaments. Like they'll take all the crap that was shoveled out in like the
Time 90s. Killers Torment.
God, Lincoln and I have played so much Time Killers.
I love Time Killers, but it's a horrible game.
It is a horrible game. I've played so much of it though that I have contemplated getting the PCB. I've played so much Time
Killers.
Are you
seriously?
Yes. That's my only experience with Fightcade, and it seems like fun. It's just not something I've ever gotten into, but when they do those tournaments with all of like the bullshit fighters, that's really appealing.
Is this what they use, you think? Like when they do like those Capcom like beat 'em up compilations for multiplayer, they use something like this, you think, in order to make the multiplayer work?
I don't know.
Potentially. I don't know. That's interesting. Next up.
Next.
Hi, this is a question for Ian. Why do you no longer go by the gaming gadfly moniker? And is that a reference to Socrates? Thank you.
No, it was never meant to be like something I went as I wanted it in like one episode of the Video Game Years, and they ran with it. It was just a reference to Mo Rocca, who I always found very humorous on clip shows.
He did. And, I love the 80s and 70s.
Yeah, he did all the 70s, 80s, 90s ones, and the subtitle under him was Media Gadfly, because he had, there was like nothing he really did at the time. He was just like on these shows.
He was on the Daily Show.
Yeah, he did all sorts of things. And at the time that we did Video Game Years, I wasn't doing the podcast. I had been in a couple episodes, so I just was like, I thought of something stupid to put underneath.
You want
to
be old? This coming January will be the 10th anniversary of the Video Game Years.
Wow.
77 episode coming out. So we filmed that stuff 10 years ago, those first episodes or two. Holy shit. Nice.
Hey, Pat and Ann. This is Jackson from the podcast of Two Consoles Too Late. I recently did a fundraiser on my Facebook wearing, I would say, like nerdy T-shirts. And I did it to raise money for the Starlight Foundation.
Oh, nice.
I was able to reach my goal of $100 in about a week. I know you guys do fundraisers, but what are some of your favorite charities? And Ian, how is that cup and char pepperoni? Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Pepperoni's great. Thank you.
Well, obviously, we've worked, we've done three or four charities over the years. Obviously, we always do one for a local Rady's Children's Hospital. I love AmeriCares. They do a lot of good work. We've raised money for them before. At least we did one marathon for them because of the disasters. I think it was all the, I forget why we did it, but we did that. I've also done AmeriCares on my own.
At Children's Miracle Network.
Yeah, it's Rady's, but yeah. Children's Miracle Network. And we've done that. World Wildlife Fund. It's another one. Obviously helping to save all the critters out there. They do. They're essential. We never raised money directly for the San Diego Zoo. Now I feel like I should, since I haven't done that before. I almost feel like I should for their whole, you know, network and all the good work they do.
Yeah, actually, I would love to do that at some point.
God, you know, I want to be rich just so I can give them money.
Bonnie and I talk about that every time we go. If we were rich, so much money would just be thrown at the zoo.
I don't need to put my name on the plaque. This is the marsupial section that Pat donated. You know, like, I want a whole section of critters. That's what I want. I just go there and realize, hey, eat up. It's on Pat's dime, marsupials. They have a lot of marsupials.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Andrew from Maryland. My daughter is turning 3 in a few months, and I'm trying to get her interested in playing video games, not just watching. I wanted her to try playing NES games with an authentic NES-style controller on a modern TV. What way do you recommend? I've got a Switch, but the Pro Controller is too big for her hands. The NES Classic would be great, but it's way too expensive now and I don't have one. And naturally, I'll be referencing a certain handy guidebook when selecting the game, of course. Thanks, guys.
I'll get shit for this, for saying this, from people.
Don't you dare say Tom Sawyer.
No. No, he's talking about, he wants to know how he would do it. Not a game suggestion. I'll get shit from people who take this stuff far more seriously than I do, and I don't love a lot of Hyperkin products, but the Retron HD is $40, $30 probably if you find it on sale. Hooks up via HDMI, uses the original Nintendo controllers.
And carts, yeah.
And carts. I've sold a ton of them. Don't have a lot of issues with them.
Okay.
Those
don't give you shit for saying that, I don't think.
There's a lot of people out there that don't like Hyperkin, and I don't like a lot of their stuff, but if you go product by product, they have made some good things. And I think if it's really just kind of a trip down memory lane, you don't want to invest a lot in this, you just want to play some old games for a while, a $40 Retron HD is a good choice.
I'll do a couple more here.
Ian, Maze, Ladders, Swamp Men, and Chibi Cat People. It's a Game Boy game. Those are the things that I remember from it. All right. I want to know what that Game Boy game is. I played it when I was a kid. Can't not remember what it was called. We play a little cat person.
Cat Trap.
It's Cat Trap. Ladders around or climb up ladders.
It's Cat Trap.
You dodge like bricks and Swamp Men.
I don't recall the Swamp Men, but I'm pretty sure that's Cat Trap.
So it seems like there's a Married with Children reference now for every week. So there's an episode where Al can't remember a song. He can't remember a song he listened to when he was in his high school years. It was him. And he's running around the whole episode trying to find out what the name of it was. He goes into the record store. And
they're there. Yeah, it is Swamp Men. I always thought they looked more like mummies.
The game's called Catch Up. So he goes into the record store, and there's this genius guy behind the counter where someone's going like, bap, 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 and he's like, I know the song. And he gets all these songs. And so then Al actually knows the whole lyric. He goes, go with him. And of course, it's the one song the guy has no idea. He's like, I don't know what that song is next. And Al walks away unhappy. But Ian is now the Swami of Game Boy games. He can answer you. He can tell you what's going on with that.
It's one of my only talents. Cat trap. It looks
You just crocheted a little tea set or whatever.
Did. It looks like it was called Pitman in Japan.
Only talents. Come on, you're decent on the mic. No?
1-2-1-2.
Hey guys, it's Ian from Texas. Your show.
Wow.
A question for both of you based on something Ian mentioned once about a customer saying they were a collectionist. I straight up died laughing when I heard that and wondered if you'd heard or read any other hilarious terms from people like that. Thanks.
Any other terms besides collectionist?
Off the top of my head, no. But I mean, collectionist was a good one. But
I mean, it's a combination of two words to make up a word that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you do better than that?
No, I think that's like cream of the crop.
And to this day,
we got the best right out of the way.
I don't know at the time if he actually thought that was a word or he just mixed up two words in his head. That customer.
He was a very serious young man. I'm a collectionist. Okay.
You don't think he was screwing with you, making that word up?
No. He was absolutely not screwing around with me.
A collectionist. Is that in Merriam-Webster or Oxford? Collectionist. There's Le Collectionist, luxury villas, rentals, and chalets. So collectionist is a term. An Urban Dictionary. That's not a real dictionary, but it is a term in Urban Dictionary. This is added because of us.
I was going to say,
August 20, 2019. We're an Urban Dictionary, basically, because of the Tales from the Game Store. It's August 20, 2019. That was right after we went to Long Island. Someone who collects items or antiques based on their hobby. Example, video games, coins, vintage items, toys, etc. Another term for what is commonly known as collector. Do you have Super Nintendos? I want to acquire one because I am a collectionist. Yeah. Wow. Thanks so much. Sweet Chi One for adding us into into Urban Dictionary. I never knew that was there. All right, I'm gonna thumbs that up there. So thanks so much for this for that. That was entertaining, everyone. All right, that's it for this podcast.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay,
that's it.
We sold some cereal. Sold some shirts.
We did. We had a good time. We talked about stuff. Hopefully, we made a couple of you laugh along the way.
You laughed, you loved, you cried. You had a full day, as Jimmy V would say. That's a full day. Laugh. What is it? Laugh, cry, and love. Is that what he said, Jimmy V? Remember that last speech you did? Jimmy V found
it? Yeah. I doubt it.
Jimmy V. All right. We'll see you next week. I'm going to have an announcement, a Video Game Year's announcement next week. It'll be decent. It won't be the best thing ever, but you'll like it. You're not going to hate it. I'm really pumping it up, Pat. You're not going to hate the announcement. enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Be safe. Eat some food. Get your vax if you hadn't. I got invited to a party that we're all going to be vaxxed. So it'd be like, holy shit, I'm around people again. It's going to be weird.
Nice.
It's going to be weird, I think.
It is. It's strange. It's fun, but it's strange.
I'm not wearing my mask there, I don't think. But
it takes a lot of energy out of me. Like, I like social situations, but it's been a year of none of them. And
you have to get back into it.
Yeah, like, it's great, but like it's almost exhausting.
Wow. Okay. Well, the food's gonna make up for it. I'm sure it's gonna be yummy food.
Yes.
And then the Mets come to town in a week after that. Enjoy the NBA playoffs as well. All right. Let's go. Let's go, Suns. We'll see you later.